Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters edition. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us very shortly. So we are back to do another Vikings reminiscing back in the day. Although this isn't as far as back in the day podcast. Of course, 2 weeks ago, we did the 80s, went through all those rosters. Man, it's fun to listen to hear those names and read the starting lineups and all that. But obviously, it peaked in 87. Last week, we did the 90s, peaking in 98, Randy Moss's rookie year. And now, we're doing the 2000s, which obviously had two peaks. 2000 technically was a peak. We all know how that ended. The show is called Living in Loserville, so no big deal. But obviously, it felt even more of a peak in 2009 with Brett Favre. So we're going to take you all the way through, just like we have the last couple of weeks, whether it's breaking down rosters and games and just things that you remember. We're going to talk Vikings 2000 roster, like I said, with the climax, doing the thing. But first we want to, send out a shots, our thoughts, and just a shout out to everyone that supported us during this time. The essential workers in the last couple of months, we definitely, our thoughts are with you, whether it's at the hospital, obviously, but really all over the place where there has been essential workers that have had to be around a lot of people and work a bunch of hours. So we definitely want to send a shout out to you guys. And also just listening, when there's no sports on, we really appreciate it. Last week, we got a great reception. We definitely appreciate that. Figured that would be a decent show or a big show based off, well, probably Randy Moss, to be honest with you. So we definitely we definitely appreciate the support that we got in general. But you could really tell that people are still, any Moss content they could get, they're going to get it. So like I said, we are going heavy 2000s. Dante Culpepper took over in 2000, had a really damn good year, and then slowly but surely the roster started turning over, and not necessarily always in a great way. We got rid of Denny, we brought in Tice, Childress, so there's a lot to talk about. But before we get into that, if this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, Purple People Eaters edition, you can find it right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. Okay. But you don't have to just listen to it on Blog Talk. Some people download the show there. Some people will listen to it in the browser, but we're all over the place. If you want to find this Living in Loserville podcast, it's located under the Ropeadope Radio podcast at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found all over the place, a lot of places I just mentioned, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn to find the programs, the platforms, I should say. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. And one more thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you have and you're not all that happy, I got something for you. I use it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. You don't have to sign right up for it. They do have a 7-day free trial. Once you sign up, there's no annual contract. The plans start as low as $55 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They do have the cloud DVR as well. That's AT&T TV Now, live streaming cable. However, if you're in a part of a state or just the country in general, or maybe in the outskirts or actually by an airport, which that can mess up your internet, there is AT&T TV. That would be more of your regular cable platform. It's a growing brand right now. It's available here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In New York, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, parts of California, all the way up to Seattle in the Northwest. Other places like St. Louis in the Midwest. It's out there. Like I said, it's growing. So just, Google AT&T TV, put your area code there. see if you got it. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, like I said, live streaming cable. Okay, so first, before we start hitting up this roster, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Aaron, and see how he's doing. What's going on, man? How the hell are you?
Oh, man, just, you know, between nap two and meal three here.
Meal three, wow.
You know, when this thing started, I didn't have any idea. I didn't think it would go 2 months, 3 months. I mean, we're at, what, almost 2 months now, a solid lockdown. I know things are opening up a little bit, but I still can't figure out mask, no mask, wear mask, you know. I guess maybe in the stores I put one on. I bought this pack of, like, 16 masks, and I just – I keep one in my pocket, and if whenever I feel like, well, I should probably put one on. But it's an awkward feeling, so I don't know. I hope we can get through this whole mask stage and just kind of get on to summer. The weather's getting nicer. Everything's starting to – got leaves on the trees. Things are looking good. So, you know, hopefully we can get outside and enjoy the summer.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It hits me every spring where you'll catch it, where you'll go on a bike ride or a hike or walk or just be outside someplace, and then a couple of days later, like it – it gets warm, then it rains, then it gets warm again. And you look at the trees, you're like, oh, my God. They're like, fully bloomed. Like, it's just it's crazy how much green's out there. And, you know, at the start when I put on mask, it sounds silly, but I felt a little safer when I was walking around the store, especially, you know, inside like that. But obviously outside it is safer. That's what all the experts say. In Minneapolis, though, inside – it just came down that you do have to have a mask on. So if you're wondering, maybe not, if you're in the city limits of Minneapolis, you now have to wear a mask when you're inside. I know in a couple of weeks when some of the outdoor patio restaurants get going, we're going to have to wear a mask talking right to them. So it'll be, like you said, though, I mean, we've had this great spring with not a lot of tease of winter. And here we are, not able to fully enjoy it. But like we said before the show started, it could be a lot worse. Let's start this thing out. Minnesota Vikings 2000, and like I said, 2000 and 2009 really are the peaks. I mean, it's a climax, and then it just kind of falls apart. And then it gets built back up. You see some promise. You know you're just like a quarterback away from being a damn good team. And what do you know? We had ourselves a pretty damn good quarterback at the end of this decade. But just starting it out, 2000, the roster, Kleinsasser's on it too. Fullback Kleinsasser, Matt Burke takes over, another guy that took over. Chris Oven is a rookie as well. And like I said, Pepper, good old Pepper, takes over at QB 11-5. Was the record that year. Obviously, we know how it worked out, but they did get to the NFC Championship game. Didn't work out as much as you'd like there. Funny, we beat the Saints in the playoffs. That happens a lot, it seems, over the years. We've talked about it, what, two times already, or is it a third? No, it's a two-time thing, man. 34-16 in that year right before it. I felt like Denny still was, of course, at the helm. I felt pretty good, better than 99, because we had brought some players that I thought would help us back when you look or just, you know, not necessarily back, but like when we brought back Dolman. But we had some, like Chris Dishman at cornerback, veteran in his ninth year, but just a solid dude. You look at Robert Tate, is a guy that you know, played corner and did a little special teams, but a lot of that Tony Williams was on the inside there. They flipped Randall to the outside in his 10th year, but otherwise a lot of the same squad when it comes to that. When you look around, John Davis is the tight end. That's one that kind of makes you go, oh, yeah, that guy. I kind of remember him, but he was more of a blocking tight end from what I remember. But, you know, 41-0. I just remember. I remember it being like 14-0, and I don't think the Vikings had touched the ball offensively yet, because I believe the Giants went down and scored – Then there was a fumble on the kickoff. They scored again. And all of a sudden, a little bit later, actually when they got to touch the ball, next thing you know, Randy Moss is hurt with the rib injury in the end zone. I think it was a turnover right there. And you're looking at the score, and you're looking at Moss on the ground, and you're like, it's just, this is all happening again. We're in the NFC Championship game, and it's not going good.
Yeah, it was a cold day, I think, in Giants Stadium. Kerry Collins was the quarterback. I remember, I have vague memories of watching that game thinking, yeah, this is a debacle. Yeah, Moss caught something, an injury of some sort. Just, you could just kind of tell the way the game kicked off about two series in that it just wasn't going to be a good day. The Giants had all kinds of success offensively. I think there was some controversy about why they had that kind of success. I think there was something, I don't remember if it was something about tapping into the headphones or something like that. I remember there was something about that. But yeah, the 41 donuts, the quote for that. And, you know, nobody really had a good day. I remember Carter throwing a fit on the sideline just because the offense couldn't get it going. And it's just kind of probably the worst Viking playoff performance I can remember. Can you remember any that kind of had that? Well, obviously you score 0 points and you give up 41 points. I can't really imagine anyone that kind of was worse than that. I mean, maybe if you lose the Super Bowl, but that's a different story. At least you scored some points. But this was a complete annihilation by the Giants for whatever reason, whether it be by hook or by crook.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, maybe that, you know, when we weren't really able to, like, know what we're watching on the TV when we're little kids, or even when we weren't even born yet, maybe there is something that we just don't know about as far as that kind of blowout. But, yeah, I would say that's our worst loss. The fact that it came in a conference final one step away once again from the Super Bowl. And like you said, even if this happened in the Super Bowl, shit, at least you went to the Super Bowl. You know, it would have been something that we hadn't seen. I mean, as far as us as fans, not, of course, we know the four prior before we knew what the hell was going on, or a lot of times alive. So, yeah, man, that, I remember watching this. Like I said, it was a rib injury from Moss. He's sitting in the end zone. I think there was an interception or something, and it's just like, yeah, we're fucked, dude. And you're right, there was some sort of sneaky Patriots-like thing, but when you're up a 41-0, like, you know, if you know the play, that's cool, that helps, no doubt. I remember the Tampa Bay when they got Gruden, when they went against Oakland, and they knew his tendencies, they knew their plays to an extent, but you still got to block people, you still got to come off blocks. Sure, it would help you, like, to be able to set up a blitz, you know, or know a blitz is coming or whatever, but you know, if they cheated and that had to do with the outcome, then we should have cheated. You know, we should have cheated better than, or just as good. So, yeah, that one was bad, dude. That one was freaking bad. And then it kind of fell apart for Denny, and just in general, it fell apart. Denny got fired that next year. 5-10 was his record. Ticey came in there for a loss. Came on board, you know, as a little substitute. And, it turned into, hey, you know, this tough guy, Tice here, Red McCombs, you know, I like this guy. Well, first of all, I'm not going to have to pay him much, so I like that too. And it's funny, Red McCombs too, man, because for years the Vikes were owned by like 18 different people, and it was nice that Red came in, but then it did kind of seem, and bought it, but it did kind of seem he'd be on the cheap. But yeah, I mean, it the roster started turning over slowly, but surely. We did bring in a vet, Byron Chamberlain, 2001, who actually had a pretty good year if you look at his stats. I do remember him vaguely. I think he played for Denver or something like that. Kleinsasser, second year, was starting to really do what he can do pretty best, which is block. Michael Bennett, rookie year. Pretty damn good one, too. You started to see, you know, some changes minorly on offense, but really defense. Eric Kelly was a rookie. I forgot about him. You know, the year before we had a vet, then we brought in another vet, Dale Carter. That year, Eddie Mack was still there. Look at our linebackers. That really fell off. You got Chris Hoban. I remember Freddie Robbins. He was pretty good, but, man, I remember saying, oh, talent Sawyer, like, he's got talent. It's talents. But, yeah, that defense really started falling off in 2001 when you start to look at that roster. 2002, you're looking at a 6-10 squad. And things start to go – I had forgotten about Dwayne Bates, who actually had a pretty good season that year. I totally forgot about that name. I remember getting Henry Crockett at linebacker. Ronnie Bradford, the vet. It is funny going through some of this. Lance Johnstone, I believe he played for the Raiders. That was another one that stood out. But, yeah, the turnover started really coming. A positive, at least for a chunk of years anyway, was McKinney that year. Going to pass it to you in a second. We'll just get to 2003, 2004. 2003, 8-8 years. So you start to see, okay, there is some sort of glimmer of hope. Like I mentioned, Tice, took over in general. He came up with that Randy ratio. I got an idea. Let's tell everybody we're going to throw it to Moss 38 times a game when you could just do that in general. But bringing us all the way, you know, to 2004, obviously we brought in Mo Williams as well. Kelly Campbell, I liked him, that little short guy receiver, kind of a slot receiver. He was something that I just remember some of him. Bryant Russell was a pretty good free safety. Corey Chavis actually played corner but played safety for us. But when you get to 2004, now we're making some, you know, positive steps. We're 6th in the league out of 32 in scoring, 25 points a game. I mean, Pepper during these years, when he's healthy, putting up crazy stats. This was his MVP, split MVP year, or should have been. 39 touchdowns through the air, only 11 picks. Got a couple more on the ground. Michael Bennett had a pretty actually got hurt that year. That's right. So we started seeing turnover, but it started to turn over the right way. E.J. Henderson, Chris Claiborne, some of these names really stand out. And, of course, I'll let you just kind of talk about a couple of things here. But, of course, that 8-8 year, 2004, we also brought in the guy, Antoine Winfield from Buffalo. I was really pumped up. Kevin Williams, like I mentioned, E.J. Henderson. Wiggins, God, I liked Wiggins, dude. But really, to top it off that year, Moss with the hamstring that didn't allow him to play like he normally plays, thought, you know what? I got one good like deep route in me. Let's play action. Let's go deep. And then when we get the touchdown, we're gonna piss off Joe Buck in the end zone.
Yeah, there's a lot of good names from this squad. I mean, I think they were trying to rebuild the defense at this point. Brought in Antoine, like you said, who paid a lot of dividends down the road because his kid came here, went to the U, and all that good stuff. Yeah, but then you see names like Chris Hovan still there, E.J. Henderson, like you brought up, Corey Chavis, who played really well for us in the short time that he played. Bryant Russell, free safety, I remember him. He was kind of a scrappy dude. I don't remember where he went to school, but offensively, I see some names that kind of stick out to me. Like, I don't really remember Sean Burton all that much as a tight end. And then Michael Bennett was a running back now. This was right before. I mean, he had some troubles at the end. I can't tell if this is the beginning of the end or the middle of the end. I can't tell exactly where that was, but he had a couple good seasons. Culpepper had a great year. Like you said, Randy's banged up. And then we got, you know, the offensive line starts to work itself. And you got Brian McKinney, who cemented himself there at tackle. Chris Lewinsky. We're starting to see that line build to what it would become. Matt Burke took over at center. David Dixon, and then Nat Dorsey, who doesn't, you know, really ring a lot of bells for me, except for the name. I kind of recognize that. But you see the offensive line start to come together as well as the defensive line. I mean, you see we went through that drought, and we're still kind of still in that drought of not having good pass rushers. This has got to be right before Jared Allen got in the mix, because at our defensive ends, we've got Kenny Mixon and Kenechi Udeza, who I thought was a pick. And then I think we got Mixon from
USC,
Mixon came in from Denver. And so we're starting to build that. Hovan's still there. And then the big boy, Kevin Williams, after we fumbled up the draft that year and couldn't get a pick in, obviously we get Kevin Williams, who was a pretty good prize for that. So you're starting to see the defense start to build. We've got building blocks on the defense, some building blocks on the offensive line. Nate Burleson pops his head up and starts making plays. So you're starting to see the beginning of something that, that might turn out to be pretty good.
Yeah, you really did. And you know, the whole thing with that is most fans know by now, obviously, but the whole Randy Moss, fake a moon, and I just loved how he wiped on the goalpost. He wiped his butt on the goalpost. But, you know, like I said, Joe Buck, oh, it's disgraceful. It's this and that and all that. But, you know, clearly, if people don't know the story, when you get bussed into Green Bay as a football team, especially the way the Vikes go, you go basically through a neighborhood. And the last chunk of time, whether it's a mile or 2 miles, I don't really know. But the Packer fans, like they do, they're into their sports, man, especially the Packers, obviously, as we know, and the Badgers there. But they moon you. The basically, ma, dad, kids, like they moon you. It's like literally they'll stand outside in their driveway, in their garages, out their window, and they'll literally moon you. I don't think they do that for every team that comes, and not everybody probably comes from that exact angle. I don't know. But what I do know is it was an inside joke, and the fans got it. They were like, you bastard, but okay, that's fair in a sense. But it's just so funny that this detailed guy, Joe Buck, doesn't even know that. Like, you just think that would come up. You know how they always talk about certain things like, man, when you shake hands with Adrian Peterson, wow, dude. Like, how many times have we heard that? You hear a little rivalry stuff. It's kind of your job a little bit to know it a tad bit. But then someone should have whispered in their ear going, hey, dude, let's at least tell the other side of it, which that's a faulty as well on the producers. But, you know, he almost acted like he actually mooned him. It was really – that always just stuck in my craw. But like you said, you could start to see something was headed in the right direction. Culpepper got hurt this year. And Brad Johnson came back at age 37. Didn't have a particularly good year. Well, actually, as a starter the next year he didn't. I take that back. But we were kind of iffy, you know, not doing good. We got on a run. We started playing, like our schedule kind of opened up for us a little bit. And we went on a run. We got, you know, to the point where we were looking like a top-tier team again. It was like, okay. And I remember back-to-back losses, one of them to the Ravens, I think the other to the Steelers. But I remember Brad, they started kind of catching up to some of the things Brad was able to get away with even at that age, and you could see it the next year especially. But I just remember him starting to throw picks in the red zone. And if you follow Brad Johnson's career, that's not something he did at all. So that was fun. Like you said, Taylor, Mwelde Moore was on the squad. Travis Taylor, the wide receiver from Florida, was on the squad. We started bringing in some good talent, some veteran talent. Obviously, 2005, we now know this guy's a degenerate. But Darren Sharper, obviously, when he was here, he played phenomenal. But like I said, we now know what a degenerate the guy is, so we're not going to speak kindly of him. Erasmus James was a guy that I thought might turn out from, I think he's from Wisconsin, actually, now that I think about it. But like you said, we started to see some positivity the next year, though. We said, you know what? We're going to try to reenact what we did in that winning streak with Brad at 38, and he came back and put up 9 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. He did have 29 rushes for 82 yards and a touch, though. That's pretty good. Chester Taylor, Tony Richardson, the fullback. Wow. I remember that guy. And, of course, this is when we trade Randy, and we got this guy named Troy Williamson, who at Notre Dame in a running system couldn't catch the ball, so I don't know why we thought he would as a pro, Aaron.
Yeah, they fell in love with his speed. I think that was the deal. You get rid of Randy, you think you got to be fast because that's how your offense is set up. And, wow, I mean, I've never seen it go so horribly bad for a draft pick. And it just seemed like it snowballed on him. He couldn't catch great to start the season or his career. And then it just seemed like it got in his head. They're starting Nike's designing glasses for him. There's just all kinds of things. Turns out kid just can't catch the ball. Capped off by, I don't remember which quarterback it was, just yoked it in Denver. And he couldn't have been more wide open. And I think the defensive back knew it as well. And he just couldn't catch the ball. He pounded the ground. That was the last we saw of him. And that was maybe the season. They held on to him for a couple of seasons for some reason, trying to get it right. But you bring up a lot of cool names that I had forgotten about. Mueldy Moore got us through some tough games that season, running the football. And then there's, you know, Lewinsky's there, Melvin Fowler. I'm just kind of looking at names that kind of stick out as names that kind of came and went. Erasmus James was a rookie. Again, we're trying to fill that pass rusher spot, and we just can't do it. We've got the inside with the Williams Wall appearing for the first time with Pat and Kevin. EJ Henderson at middle linebacker. Still got Winnie. The secondary's coming together with Chavis. Again, like you mentioned, Sharper, and then Brian Williams, who came and went as well. But you start to see, now you're starting to see that team coalesce again into what it would become. McKinney was still holding down the tackle spot. And I remember that season, there was everything just kind of seemed disjointed. It was kind of, you had the parts. You're right, Brad Johnson was on his last legs and was making critical errors. But I mean, we kind of saw his whole trajectory. We talked a little bit about him last week and how he kind of started off, and then he had some success, and then he got beat up by Cunningham, went to another place, came back, and, you know, kind of turned into the old Brad Johnson a little bit at that point. I think he always kind of was what he was. I think in Tampa, they kind of maybe made the offense a little bit more friendly for him. I mean, he made him a little more effective. But yeah, you're seeing names like Klein Saucers there. Travis Taylor, remember, a wide receiver out of Florida. We all had high hopes for because we needed him. Randy was gone, and we had Nate Burleson, so there wasn't a lot to throw to for Brad either. So, I mean, I think you can't really put too much on his shoulders for that. But, you know, Adam Goldberg at right guard.
Heck of a guard.
I mean, we could use him now. But, no. I mean, you're just starting to see things that were there in the big season start to come there. Keith Newman's at in linebacker, so we haven't quite gotten to Ben Lever yet. And Sam Cohort, do you remember Sam Cohort as a middle linebacker?
Yeah, I want to say he was I don't think it was the Bills because that's a different Cohort. Didn't he go to Florida State? I think Cohort went to, I don't know. Maybe it's the last name Cohort I recognize.
Because we got him from he was a pick of the Bills, a second round pick of the Bills.
There we go.
So probably got him in free agency. But, yeah, I mean, there's names that will continue to be mentioned going forward, like Lewinsky, McKinney, the Williams.
Right.
Jay Henderson.
What we can't forget, though, is October 6th in 2005. Lake Minnetonka. There was this little thing it was called a bunch of stuff. The Love Boat was something. And you know, of course, we had Fred Smoot come in. Fred Smoot is the one who set up all that, I think. Good old Smooty. You had Pep and Smoot and Moore and Wiggins and Williamson. You had a bunch of folks that, you know, it's a normal thing. I mean, just ask the captain of the ship who got a we're not going to go too deep on reporting this, but the captain of the ship was in on it, and I don't think it was his first venture. Let's put it that way. But that was interesting. That was interesting. That's a locker room thing. Hutchinson, 2006, brought in Lieber, like you mentioned, as well. 2007, still that 8-8 stuff where you're like, hey, we brought in Childress, of course. We can't forget about that. Greenway. Who, you know, Greenway had as a rookie on special teams running down, tore his ACL. We didn't get a good look at him, obviously. And, you know, he had a pretty damn good career. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer, but I believe he's close to a Hall of Famer as far as, you know, as a Vike. You know, I think that he should be in the ring Ring of Honor at some point. He was a damn good player. And also, a guy named Tamarius Jackson shows up. And I believe that's the year before. I think he got a little playing time. And maybe that's who threw him the ball. Williamson, who was wide open. And like you said, just dropped it. Vicente, Ray Edwards, Berrien, Gus Frerotte. Once we got into 2008, we're talking about two. So 2007, 2008, we're starting to build. And, of course, Jared Allen from Kansas City pops into the scene as well. Think circa 2008. And like I said, you also have a guy by the name of All Day, Adrian Peterson, who's a pretty damn good little player there too. This is when you're like, dude, if we can just get something going at quarterback, we thought maybe, you know, the old vet, the old Gus Frerotte, who has a Washington Redskin headbutted, like, after, like, a big first down play or maybe a touchdown. I remember he was all pumped up. He headbutted the pad right before, you know, by the fans, almost like a baseball field. He headbutted it, but there was, like, a steel thing there, messed up his neck. I remember that. It's like, oh, Gus, what are you doing? But, yeah, it seemed like, okay, dude, we're really starting to do it now. Cedric Griffith was in his second year, who had started as a rookie as well. Like I mentioned, Lieber, but Napoleon Harrison as well. And really, Ray Edwards, dude. Oh, my God. He actually was trying to be, I don't know if he still is, but trying to be a heavyweight boxer like a lot of pro football players do when they try to find something else to do. I don't think he was done yet. I think it was the lockout when he was doing that. Either way, though, by the time 2007, 2008 rolled around, this is right when we're like, dude, we were 10-6 that year. It looked like, man, if we could just, what do we get? The second round? Do we trade up to the second round to get T-Jack? I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember either. Right now I'm scanning. I'm looking for Sidney Rice because he wasn't a rookie in 2009. I'm at 2008 right now, by the way. And yeah, you're looking at receivers here. You've got Bernard Berrien and Bobby Wade is listed as starters that season. And I'm trying to look. I know Percy wasn't there because that was Percy's rookie year the following year. So I'm looking
He didn't play his rookie year. But you're right. He was on the squad.
But was he on the roster already? I mean, he had to have been. There he is. Yeah, I see him. Yeah, so and then you got, you know, B-Rob wasn't playing a lot at that point either. We had Jared Allen coming in. Nafahi Tahi was there. Thomas Tepe, a U kid, came in for a little bit. So that was good. And this is the season where you go, yeah, we got everything but a receivers and a quarterback. And obviously those two components work hand in hand. So, you know, we didn't have much going. Offensive line was pretty much set. We got Hutchinson was in there. So you went McKinney, Hutchinson, Matt Burke, Herrera and Ryan Cook. So we're kind of a couple pieces still missing in that, you know, before you got all the pieces in place, quote unquote. And then you got, you know, Ray Edwards and Jared Allen. That'll do. Now, Ray, he went on to be a boxer. You know a little bit more about his boxing career than I would, but, you know, obviously he had some fight to him, no pun intended. And then you had Pat Williams and Kevin Williams in there again. Ben Lieber, Napoleon Harris. Now, he came up in the system, played for a season or so, but he didn't last too long as a starter. And then Cedric Griffin out of Texas.
He was in that trade.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then Cedric Griffin out of Texas, who was a good corner, but ended up getting hurt. You remember him? He was a tall, lanky, kind of Zimmer type corner. And he ended up playing that cover too, I think, for Leslie Frazier. Was he the DC then? I'm not sure if he was, but anyways, yeah, and he was a great corner. I remember I had high hopes for him, too, because I just thought he was a good corner, but I think he got hurt, ACL or something like that. He couldn't come back from, but he was young at that time. Sharper was still in there, so now you're really on the precipice here of a good team. Like you said, you just needed someone to lead it and to play quarterback and someone to catch the ball, which are, you know, in today's NFL, those are big parts. But you still try to run the football at that point because you had Adrian Peterson, who was unstoppable at that point. He kind of hit the league and just kept running and had a great season. And so, yeah, I mean, you think that obviously, as a fan, you didn't have any idea where this was going because all you saw was Gus Frerotte at quarterback. But in hindsight, you start to see that they're just a few pieces away.
Yeah, and I remember the Packers wouldn't, you know, trade Favre right to us, which I obviously, you know, understand. They traded him to the Jets. But once they traded him to the Jets, then it was open season because he could be like, well, I'm going to retire and they don't have my rights anymore. And then, oh, by the way, I'm going to go be a Viking. And it was pretty funny how that worked. Phil Lohold was a tackle out of Oklahoma. Sullivan we had drafted, and now he was in there for his first year starting. Who that kind of solidified that line that Anthony Herrera, another guy we could actually use this coming year, just a solid. So yeah, I mean the line was set. Vasante, that tight end with, I mean, he had a great year, 11 freaking touchdowns with Favre. I mean, he was really doing his thing that year. Sidney Rice, we just mentioned as well. He popped off 83 catches, 1,300 yards. And Berrien is listed as a starter, but why can't I think of his name? Help me out.
Percy.
Percy. We know Percy, who is the definition of a football player, you know, was starting to do his thing as well. And so you're thinking, man, I wonder if this could happen. I wonder if this could happen. And then the helicopter's in the sky, and Jared Allen, and I can't remember who else. I think I can't remember. Greenway and somebody else went down there.
I think it was Hutchinson.
Like, Hutchinson, yeah. That sounds about right. And, you know, he's just like, hey, let's do this. Let's come get you. Let's save you. And, you know, he still had a little juice left, and, man, did he have. He was 40 years old. But he put up over 4,000 yards with a guy who, you know, a running back that almost put up 1,400 yards too. So that's telling you something. Only 7 picks, 33 touchdowns. One of his best years, and the guy won back-to-back MVPs. So that was just, I gotta say, some people didn't like this. You know, the whole he's an enemy. I'd rather go 0-16 with him on our, you know, and not have him on our squad. Some people were in and out of this. I do remember at the time we hadn't seen each other in a while, and you were at a bar just down the way from where I was, and somebody that I know really well and you know was like, hey, Chris is right down the street. So we get to talk, and I remember right away when it happened, you weren't necessarily – not necessarily on board because you knew Favre was a stud, but just it kind of bugged you a little bit that this freaking guy we watched, you know, once a year at least get us was now going to be a Minnesota Viking. And a lot of fans were very mixed. Either people were like, hell yeah, F the Packers, or it was like, God damn it, I hate Favre. I can't do this.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that as well. And I was apprehensive, and I was really against it in the beginning because I thought to myself, well, you can't just do that. You know, I was thinking that, you know, you're a Packer, you stay a Packer. I know I went to the Jets for that year, but I just didn't know. And I kind of had a feeling that it wasn't going to end well. And of course, we'll talk a little bit later, but Brett had been, you know, throwing interceptions his last season in Green Bay, making big mistakes at big times. I think we talked about that a little bit at the time. And it didn't take me very long to get on board. I think game one, I was like, all right, let's do this. I mean, he had a fantastic game. Peterson had a good game. We had Percy just showed up from day one. You just knew, okay, well, this is different. And we've never moved the ball like this in the last 10 years or so. And I was just like, yeah, it's very easy to get on board. Now, I didn't know it would go as far as it went. But it was sure fun to watch, especially young AP just, you know, killing people. I mean, it was just violent running. And then Percy could catch anything. He could run anything. He could return kicks. Just an offensive football player that could play today. And I think he's going to try. But he just was very skilled out of Florida. And it was, you know, kind of caught a good break in getting him as well. And he just fit into anything you needed to do offensively. You could use him in the backfield, anything that you needed. So I kind of got on board pretty quickly with Brett Favre. I didn't like it at first, But I always had the feeling, pit in my stomach, that it, when it comes down to it, he's going to do something. But what a year. I remember I was, I think I worked at a pizza shop at that time. And the whole season, it was just pretty much talk about this play, that play, this player, that player. And it was a really fun year. And you see names like, you know, that when it came together, you know, Matt Burke had left. Remember, he went to Baltimore. And so we are all concerned about if Sullivan could handle the center position. And he held it down well enough. Phil Loadholt had come in and take care of that other tackle spot. And the defense looked solid, although still running that cover two, which is now a joke. But, yeah, I mean, it was one of those years where it's like, ah, we'll see where it goes. But it didn't start off well for me. I wasn't on board right away.
I mean, a lot of people, just that inner hatred for Green Bay, I totally get it. But, yeah, even that first game against Cleveland, you brought that up, and it flashed in my head like, oh, yeah, he went off, AP. Because remember, he just man-child that little boy out there on the field. He pushed him over. It's like, get out of my way. He ran for 225 yards, or at least the Vikings did. I don't know if they're all. I'm sure Taylor got some of those yards. But I remember that play is like, oh, my God. And we only passed for 85 yards. We didn't even try to, like, do much with him right off the bat. Now, that changed pretty quick. But I do remember AP that year pushing that little boy, whoever tried to tackle him, because that was on the road at Cleveland. And then early on, if people weren't sold, they were on that San Francisco 49ers game. 27-24, last second, he got 377 yards that, or 283 yards that that game. So we did start to pass more, but that freaking slanging it, who the hell caught that ball on the edge of that corner? Oh my God, this is going to piss me off. He was like a fourth wide receiver.
Yeah, I know. Oh, look it up here.
You know,
once I see
about
the name, I'll know it.
Right.
But that play, we got him from San Francisco.
Yeah, you're right, because that was part of the play-in, too. That was a home game, the first home game of Favre. And that play made me go, this is why we got him on the squad.
It was Greg Lewis.
Come again?
Was it Greg Lewis?
There you go, yep.
I think it was Greg Lewis, yep.
That was awesome. And then you're thinking, all right, dude, here we go. And then it leads to the Packer game. And both those games, they look tighter than they really were when you're watching them. I remember I worked, speaking of, you say work at a pizza shop right down the street there, not even down the street, kitty corner, basically. And I worked at a Packer bar that I didn't know when I got hired that it was a Packer bar. Fall came around, and they said, we got to have a ramp-up meeting for football. You know, I'm like, for football? I didn't know this is a sports bar all of a sudden. Like, that's cool, but okay, sure, whatever. Well, they're like, well, you know, it's a Packer bar. I'm like, what'd you say? I'm putting in my papers right now. No, but I actually stayed on for quite some time. But I remember low dapping and running into the kitchen to scream in joy and celebration. I remember there was like a couple of Vikings tables, mostly Packers obviously in there, but there were some Vikings fans mixed in, but there was this booth that I come by and kind of low-five everybody because I couldn't get too crazy, you know, and sit there and cheer in front of the fan base to the point where I'm putting it in their face because I'm still trying to get tips. I did actually acquire a lot of friends that way, getting to know them when you see them every week, and they knew not to high-five me when, you know, the Packers did anything positive. They knew that as long as I respected them as well. And they'd be like, yeah, what's up, you know? But, yeah, because there was that play where there was about – and they actually played this game not long ago when they were doing a bunch of replays. There was a game – there was a play where it felt like 25 seconds, you know, that Favre had in the backfield looking. I think it was the Vasante, the tight end. Winged it. I mean, it felt like an eternity, like he had gotten redrafted and brought back on the squad, Favre. Like, it was just forever, and it took us a little while. I remember that Baltimore Ravens game. We came back in. We had the lead. Then we had to come back and win it right at the buzzer, 33-31. And then the first loss was to the Steelers, and I remember there was a scoop and score, and it just wasn't our game type thing. But at Green Bay, middle of the season, basically at 7-1, 38-26, right away, Percy made his presence felt in that game. And like I said, it was only, 12-point game, but it felt like they won the game by four touchdowns or something like that. It felt really good right the halfway through, like, dude, this is the squad. And then we did kind of have a bumpy ending with some tough games at Carolina, at Chicago. Little bumpy, though, from what you kind of remember how great that season was at 12-4. Little shaky at the end. I remember that Bears overtime game. I think that was a Monday night game. Didn't quite get that, but it still felt pretty good, heading into the playoffs. Well, what do you remember? Any, remembrance of that second half of that season? And like I said, I remember Percy on that Green Bay game right away making his presence felt. I think someone fell down trying to tackle him, and he caught it, and it was just a big, long touchdown. And you thought, all right, dude, we're going to do this again to him.
I had forgotten that the bar that you worked at the time was a Packer bar. It clicked back in, and I was thinking to myself, man, no wonder you've developed all these arguments. You've been working in Packer bars for too long. I was full steam ahead there with Favre. I mean, we were just cruising through the season. Yeah, little hiccups in the second half of the season, but you kind of thought they were just kind of, going for the playoffs. And Brett was firing all cylinders. Everything was looking good. Percy was getting kick returns, and he had an unusual way of running back a kick. We've talked about it a couple times, but he just, one cut and go. That's the way you got to do it, but not many players have the guts to do it, and he did. And I think he got two or three that season, at least I remember it that way. I'm not saying that's the truth, but I won't let that get in the way of a good story. And then you started to see him kind of prepare for the playoff run, and that's when I started to get a little bit tense up a little bit, because I thought, well, if there's going to be a time where your heart's going to get broken, it's going to be in the playoffs. And I would watch the games, but I knew, you had such good parts, Chris. You had Adrian, who could just run you out of any situation as long as he held onto the ball. Nobody could really stop him at the time. Percy to do a lot of things with. Offensively, he was really good. Defensively, I thought, linebackers weren't the greatest. I know Greenway was still pretty young at that point. EJ was pretty good. Lieber was good enough and was a pretty good player. I mean, he had a great season. I remember Greenway made some pretty good plays in the open field that kind of stick out in my head. But, I mean, it was all coming together. You knew it was going to be a meaningful playoff run. You didn't know to the extent, but you had Brett Favre. You knew you had a chance.
Yeah, definitely. And getting into that that second round, I suppose, not the first round, we did have a bye. And, that butt whooping, actually, we had a bye, right? Were we second in the division that year? Yeah, because the Saints were number one. That's what it was, right? Yeah. I think so.
That sounds right to me.
So the Cowboys hadn't won a playoff game in quite some time. I remember that. They got the win and they're all feeling good. And we just devoured them, 34-3. We actually put down the screens and all that year in the Packer bar. It was pretty dope. And just to back it up, I never got in any arguments with those Packer fans, ever. I knew not to. You know what I mean? I knew not to because, one, it's going to fuck up my tips. Two, it's like, these are fucking Packer fans, dude. Like, it's getting to, like, the Badgers or something, It's like, I'm not going to be able to argue with you. I just can't do it. I was pretty good at for a while. A couple times you just have to go in the kitchen. I need a little time.
Yeah, I think probably you had more arguments in your inner dialogue, I suppose, than outwardly. You're still trying to make that money. I get it, but I don't know if I could have done it. I mean, I don't know if I could have held in my excitement or my disappointment that way. So I got to give you kudos for that.
Yeah, that first year it was a tough one. I remember it was the first game against the Packers, actually, on the road, and they'd set up a screen outdoors. It was indoor and outdoor. They go outdoors until like somewhere in November, and I remember the first game they ended up losing, but that was the Rodgers' first year as well. But just kind of, we just kicked the shit. Sidney Rice is just catching balls left and right. Kicked the shit out of them. And then, obviously, NFC Championship game, Saints, this is our year, yada, yada, yada. But we can blame a lot of people, you know, in that. The pick at the end against the Saints, obviously, the pick at the end, instead of just taking the 3 to 5 yards, we got a great kicker at that time. I just mentioned kicker and Vikings of late, so I'm going to knock on wood. It didn't really feel, you know, it felt like, okay, we're good to go. But when you look at, you know, there's people to blame. Like I said, I just blame Favre. But when you look at it, it's hard not to blame Adrian Peterson in that game. He had two crucial fumbles, and one of them were about to walk into the end zone in the first half. And it just was crushing at that time. Because sometimes he tried to get that extra little something, and it was actually, it would have been 21-7 more than likely. They ended up scoring on that next drive. I believe it would have been 21-7 at half. And when you look at that, it just hurt me. I was like, you know what? Here we are. You know, let's put Taylor in more then, just for this game. You know, in the Super Bowl, it's a fresh start, AP. I'm not saying don't ever give him the ball. But at that time, he loved to by the fourth or fifth guy that's on you, AP, at some point, you're going to have to protect that ball more, because the sixth guy, he's just going to go for the ball. And that's what was happening that season. And actually, if you look at Barry Sanders, Walter Payton, some of the great running backs, the first couple of years, they actually did have some fumble-rooski problems. Now, he, to his credit, tightened up that later in his career. But that game, I was just like, you know what? Screw it. Let's just go with Taylor right now. Taylor is steady. He's solid. He was like a 1,000-yard rusher before he got here. I believe he got to 1,000 the year before we got AP. He knows the system. He could play on third down, which he played on third down a lot of times instead of AP. I was just really intent on saying, you know what, let's just bench Peterson momentarily for a little bit, because we can't. In some of those two fumbles that he had, and he also, I believe, put it on the ground and lost yardage. So we were backed up on a third down, if I remember correctly. But when you look at the total stats of that game, dude, looking at the total stats of that game, you just look back and go, only us would lose that game. Maybe us and the Browns.
Yeah, impending doom. I mean, I think you raised good points about Peterson's culpability in that. You're right. I mean, he's the strongest dude in the world. He couldn't hang on to the football in that game. Critical times, critical fumbles. But, you know, I don't know if I want to blame. There's so many things you could blame that game on. There was the whole, Bounty Gate thing where they were trying to kill everybody, the Saints that were trying to hurt everybody. And then you got, Peterson probably taking some tough shots, you know, to drop the ball. And then you got, I completely remember the final play offensively that game. I think that was the final play with Brett. And man, I mean, there were so many options there.
Well, wasn't that
and
the final play of regulation?
I don't know. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think it was final play of regulation, because we were trying to move in into field to kick a field goal to win the game.
But you had so many options, Brett. I mean, you could have ran. Now, I know your ankle was probably the size of a basketball. I get that. but he had just got knocked around. I mean, it's really hard to say anybody had. I mean, Lieber had a bad pass interference penalty, which was either bullshit or good. Still up for debate. Technically, I guess, if you want to go exactly by the rule book, which the refs like to do with us, it was probably pass interference, but it had never been called all season. So it's one of those anomalies that the Vikings tend to get. And then, you know, I guess my thought at the time was run the ball, Brett. Yeah, you need 6 yards, 5 yards, something. The field was wide open. Just run the ball. Just run and slide, get down, get the first down. But then you got Brett Favre, who thinks he can make any throw, and, you know, probably 85% of the time he can. And, he saw what he saw. He did what he did. And that was that. I mean, I hate to break it down. But I knew it was, it had to have been a split-second decision. He made the decision. and he did what he did, and it didn't work out. But blame's a tough thing, you know, it goes on the whole team. But, you know, I guess I would have made a different choice there. But, you know, I never played in the NFL. I don't know, you know, what it's like. But, and I think 9 out of 10 times he makes that throw. I just think that it happened. We go on and on about
throw,
it.
But, though. I mean, there were so many people around Sydney.
Well, it breaks all the rules of throwing the football. I mean, you never throw back into the center of the field. You don't throw across your body. You don't fade one way and then go and throw the other way. There's so many fundamental reasons not to make that throw, but it's Brett Favre. He makes those throws, you know? And so I don't think it keeps him up at night. I think the beers
help him, but no, I don't think it does either.
I don't know what keeps him up at night. Maybe there's another interception at some point, but I mean, that was what I was kind of waiting for all season. So when it happened, I was like, you know, I remember sitting with my other friend, Chris, going there it is. That's it. That I saw that coming all year. And although I didn't, but you know, I had mentioned a few times, so I thought I'd go ahead and make a point, but yeah,
well,
I mean,
could make that point of Favre. You are correct because he is a gunslinger, and later in his career, he was throwing heavy picks. Maybe not that year, but you're right. I remember that one he did against the Giants in the playoffs a couple of years before that. One of his last years, I think, with Green Bay.
But to, you know, bring it back to the point, you're right. AP, you know, a little too little too late, because later in his career, he managed to somehow fix the fumbling problem. It got better. I think he fumbled quite a bit that season in 2008, 2009. But, you know, I think it was more just, you know, the timing of the drops, you know, like you said, when he's on the goal line, which would have put us up, and he manages the fumble. I think we were on the 5-yard line, 4-yard line, something like that. Knowing we're going in, probably iced the game, and he gives up the ball. Defense, I think, made a stop. But, yeah, I mean, you could look a lot of ways at that game, and actually probably is paying dividends now because we keep beating the Saints in big situations. And so, yeah, I mean, but that was a tough one, man. I mean, almost as tough as 2000 or as 98. 98 was more of a how in the hell could this happen? 2009 for me was more of a kind of I told you so moment, but nonetheless still deflating.
Yeah, it definitely was. And then, you know, cue in the Living in Loserville podcast in Minnesota sports since 91. Brett Favre had the streak going, bunch of starts in a row. I think he got up to 13 or whatever, and he got hurt on the on a field he probably shouldn't even been playing on because it was frozen. Because that's the year the Metrodome, you know, caved in, and the field that they have for the Gophers, they didn't have the little Kindles to warm that thing up. They weren't even playing on it at that. They didn't even know, like, oh, let's just do it. We got to do it, you know? So we get a home field, and he got trashed on that field. And that was a rough season to bounce back on. Obviously, technically that's 2010, but it sure just kind of went out with a whimper, like, oh, okay. We brought back Moss that year. Didn't we trade for Moss that year? I think so. Because Sydney got hurt. Or did we trade Sydney? I can't remember. But we got Moss that year, and he caught a touchdown with the Jets, I believe. I think that was the year. Maybe it was – was it a couple years after that? I think we brought
– No, I think you're right, because I think they actually connected for one long touchdown pass.
Yeah,
against the Jets. And I remember the interviews being like, Favre said he always wanted to throw to Moss. Moss said he always wanted to play with Brett. And it was a big, you know, a big deal. They threw, I think they got one touchdown out of that whole thing. But I don't remember if they traded or he came in some sort of free agent deal. I don't remember that at all. You'll probably be able to look it up.
Well, I think it was during the season, so it had to be. I'm pretty sure. Well, you know, maybe they cut him. Maybe it wasn't a trade. Maybe they cut him and then brought him in. But I remember, I think it was against the Jets. Nice catch in the end zone. But, yeah, it pretty much faded away, as did the end of that decade. And now we've come to another end, and it's 2009, you know, that year, and we had some problems trying to find a quarterback after that for quite some time, and it led to 2017-2018 season that went pretty damn good, but man, it took us a while to try to find a quarterback, whether it's Vet, whether it's Ponder. I believe, didn't T-Jac get another crack at it when Favre left? I don't remember now, but yeah, man, it was a rough one. Hell of a season, beating the Packers twice. That was great. But yeah, the way it ended, there is about three or four things you could pick to with the bounty, like you said, in that game, but it's just one of those, you know, endings that's why we call it living in Loserville. I know there are some people that don't like that. They'd never even listen to that podcast because of the name. And then when they really think about it, they're like, yeah, you fucking hit it on the nose there. So, any last words, sir, before we shut this puppy down?
I think you were right about T-Jac. I think that was Childress's last stand of trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. Just didn't really work out. And you're right. And then the quarterback carousel started, you know, highlighted by some great names like Brooks Bollinger and just some really Matt Cassel for a bit. So, I mean, that's when it started, and it all kind of culminated with getting Cousins here. And we'll see what the returns are on that. But, feel free to follow us on Instagram. We're at living.inloserville, dot between the in and the loserville. Dot podcast on Instagram. We're going to try to post a little bit more. We'll definitely post this show and give you a link to listen to it. And it was fun talking about the 2000s or the Ott Vikings, I guess we'll call them.
It really had a great start, fell on our face. I think that 41-0 loss to the Giants just fucking tumbleweeded the rest of the 2000s for a while until they started building back up. But like you said, it is fun to still go over these rosters. We'll be back for at least another show. You never know, maybe two. But like you said, we like to send our appreciation out to everybody that supported us during this time when there's no live sports. And enjoy the season. All coach. No, sorry, I had to throw up my Denny. All right, guys, you take it easy. We'll be back next week. Peace.